Labors of Love. An informative look at modern-day evangelization, featuring the ministries and work of the Catholic Church in South Texas. Stay with us and learn of the Church's many services and benefits with your host, Margaret Alleria, Director of Evangelization and Catechesis for the Diocese of Corpus Christi, as she explores the Catholic faith with her many guests and their labors of love.
Thank you for being with us on Labors of Love. I'm your host, Margaret Alleria, and I'm here with my two very special guests, Valerie Uriegas, who is the site coordinator for Rachel's Vineyard, and Tammy Alcala, who is a core team member. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, Valerie, I've had you on our program before, and we had a very exciting program when we spoke about Rachel's Vineyard. But let's go ahead and get to know both of you a bit more, if you don't mind telling me a little bit about yourself, Valerie.
Sure, no problem. My name is Valerie Uriegas, and I'm glad to be back here to shed some more light and information on our Rachel's Vineyard Retreat. The Rachel's Vineyard Retreat has been part of Corpus Christi for 10 years, and I've been fortunate enough to serve on the team the last 5 years. I'm currently involved in organizing these retreats along with our core team twice a year. Just am so excited about this ministry and the hope and healing that it brings to the men and women that are called to participate on our weekends.
All right. And what about yourself, Tammy? You're new to the program.
I am new to the program, but I'm not new to Rachel's Vineyard. I actually attended the fourth Rachel's Vineyard retreat that was offered here in Corpus Christi. And since I was a retreatant, I've been on core team since. So I am the one who goes out to churches and will speak at the pulpit and give my testimony and invite people on our retreat.
Well, thanks for sharing. So let's go ahead and talk about what a Rachel's Vineyard Retreat is. I'll let you start, Valerie.
Rachel's Vineyard Retreats are open to both men and women and families who have gone through an abortion experience. They're based on 40 hours of Christ in the tomb, the death and resurrection of Christ, and we focus on living scriptures throughout the weekend to help us to place us in the time of Christ as, for example, the women at the well, the woman caught in adultery, and to physically place ourselves there and work through those living scriptures to get us to look at that deep-rooted wound and bring forth the healing that would come from that.
Okay, so in particular, we're talking about the healing from an abortion experience.
An abortion experience, mm-hmm. Yes. And so looking at that, we go through the process of helping people to go back to that time and experience of the abortion to look and see what other factors have come into place to get to the point of them either choosing or having this experience forced upon them. And so we help the men and women on this weekend to work through those issues. And it's amazing to see a lot of times the things that have been suppressed because of the abortion, the trauma that has come forth, and what has been suppressed in the sense that this has been such a traumatic experience that oftentimes we forget so many things that have led us to that point, or we force that out of our thoughts. And so in doing these live-in scriptures, it's helpful to work through the process and to come to seek that healing through whatever the exercise is on the weekend. And so through the course of the weekend, our team is facilitating these activities. And it's just so beautiful to see the transformation from one activity to the next.
So this is a moment where either a male or a female who has experienced an abortion mm-hmm. can come and get some healing.
Yes.
Tammy, can you speak to the importance of healing?
Well, I think healing is important because abortion not only affects the mother of the child that is aborted, but it affects the families. The families suffer from this. As a parent myself, I know I made many mistakes because of my guilt, including, you know, drinking at times when probably I shouldn't have when my kids were little. And Rachel's Vineyard just made me a better person inside and out. It made me a better mom. It made me a better wife. It made me a better friend. And the love that I felt on my Rachel's Vineyard as a retreatant is immeasurable. And I am so glad that this was around, because I was literally drowning inside. Although I had all of the elements to be happy, a beautiful husband, beautiful children, I had a great job, I was drowning inside because of my pain and suffering. And so Rachel's Vineyard is an opportunity for us to basically bring people to the foot of the cross and suffer along with Jesus, and in the end, rise up with him and become a different person and a better person in the end. For me, I'm a better person.
For some women, they might have experienced the pain of abortion, but it was a moment in time that maybe they've suppressed. But there are still some factors that, some things, let's say, that they're doing that are separating themselves from God and other people. So, for example, drinking, there's a higher suicide rate for women that have experienced an abortion. We know, based on statistics, that millions of women are having abortions.
Yes.
And so these retreats, I'm sure, are invaluable. But can you go ahead and speak to that? So we bring women in who know that they need to start a healing process if they haven't, and this retreat helps them with that.
Yes. And, you know, the thing about it is, with the effects of abortion, that lengthy list is just, it's endless on all of the effects that come from the abortion experience itself. You know, the suicide, the depression, the self-hate, there's just, it just spirals. It's like this snowball effect. And so I think one of the biggest things that we tried to promote with the women there, you know, and a lot of it is just to be there, to go through the experience. We don't force anyone to speak if they don't want to.
It's a non-judgmental environment.
It is. It's very small. We only take up to 12 people on our retreats, and our core team is very small. We have a counselor on the weekend. We have a priest on the weekend. And then we have our core team that's there. And it's a very intimate experience, almost like a
private as well.
Very confidential. Mm-hmm. We don't even divulge the location until they're actually signed up for the weekend. So we try to keep that confidentiality, you know, in everything that we do with the weekend. So it's just one of those things that is very difficult for women to even register for, very difficult for them to get off the vehicle, to walk down their hall, to go into the bedroom, to even be there on the first night. It's very difficult for a lot of people to get to that moment.
Well, Valerie, let me ask you, why would it be difficult for a woman to know she needs healing, but she just can't take that first step?
You know, I think from the perspective of a lot of our core team is how I can speak. You know, many of us are involved with several activities within our parishes and around the city. And so I think one of the biggest things is to the judgment of others, not so much the judgment of the priest or from Christ, because we know they are merciful and forgiving, and we have the sacrament of confession, and so we know we've been forgiven. But to come before our peers, to stand up, because not everyone can be bold enough, and not everyone is called to give a pulpit talk like Tammy is. Not everyone on our team is there yet. And so I think for a lot of these men and women who may have suffered an abortion experience, you know, 2 or 20 or 40 years ago, still when we're in positions where we're maybe at the focal point or of a leader of our parish, I think it's difficult for others to receive us. Because, you know, even at a ministry conference that I attended, people feel that there's not that problem at their church. You know, I had a woman come up to me and say, "What is this Rachel's Vineyard ministry?" And as I explained it to her, because I was encouraging anyone who came up to our table to please take flyers, to take it back to their parish. And she says, "Well, we don't have that problem at our church." Mm. And so I think for a lot of people still, it's either turn the blind eye to it or not know how to approach or receive a woman or a man who has gone through the actual abortion experience because the fear of judgment.
So then on one hand, our society says that we should be independent and I do whatever I want with my body. But then on the other hand, there's that fear or stigma of, well, you had an abortion and, you know, everything that comes with that. Then we get stuck. Yes. And then the woman is not able to come and seek some healing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of times after a woman has an abortion, she definitely regrets it. I know for me, for the longest time, even though I was Catholic, I would put up a fight with anybody who tried to tell me that it was a life because of what I was told, the lies that I was told, and what I didn't want to bring myself to believe that what I had done. Therefore, I would just put up the biggest fight. And I think after you realize, once you do become a mother and you realize it was a child, I murdered my child, coming to that realization is so hard. And that's where the sadness and the silence comes, and you just kind of tuck it away, because if you tell somebody, how is this person going to receive you? How is this person who knows where you work and knows your children that you play baseball with and, you know, things like that, or in the community, you're well known in the community, and then you stand up and say, I had an abortion, when all of your friends are pro-life and they look at you like, how could you do that? And so that, I think, is where the fear comes from, and therefore that's why we have to bring it to light, because God says you have to bring your sin to light. And when you don't, that is where a lot of the sadness comes from. And that's what we're here to promote. That's why we're here to promote Rachel's Vineyard.
Stay with us. We will take a quick break and be back to speak about Rachel's Vineyard further.
This is Labors of Love.
The second Sunday of Easter is known as Divine Mercy Sunday. This year, that date is April 27th. Thursday, April 24th, through Divine Mercy Sunday, the 27th, Our Lady of Corpus Christi Retreat Center, 1200 Lantana, in the shadow of the Blue Dome, is offering you the opportunity to gain a deeper understanding of the mercy of God, a God who loves us and wants us to recognize that His mercy is greater than our sins, so that we will call upon Him with trust, receive His mercy, and let it flow through us to others. To register for this Divine Mercy retreat, visit deepprayer.org or call the Retreat Center at 361-289-9095. Let His mercy show through you. Visit deepprayer.org.
Welcome back to Labors of Love. Again, I'm with my guest, Valerie Uriega, site coordinator for Rachel's Vineyard, and Tammy Alcala, who is a core team member. We've had a really great discussion about the healing effects that Rachel's Vineyard offers to women who have experienced an abortion and men. And now I really want to get into the nitty-gritty of perhaps the effects of abortion on females first, and then we'll move on to males. But before she has the abortion, during and after the abortion, and even maybe for a good majority of her life, what is a woman going through? I know that sometimes, well, many times abortion is glorified, and it's not a big deal, and when actually it is. And many women suffer tremendously when they experience one. So Tammy, we'll let you answer this one.
I think from my own experience, when I had my abortion, it was definitely, this is the right thing to do. And I remember sitting in the room and thinking, listening to everybody crying and thinking, if this was the right thing to do, then why was everybody crying? That was my first day that I left the abortion clinic. The following day, I was rushed to the emergency because I started hemorrhaging. And I found out that pieces of my baby were still inside of me, and that was really where my self-hatred for what I had done set in. And so for many years, I thought about my baby, a lot of the things I've blocked out, but at the same time, around January, February, because I think that's when I had my abortion, I get really depressed and I start thinking about my child and the things that I did. And so for me, it was definitely depression, self-hatred, drinking, pushing people away, not really hanging on to the relationships that I needed to hang on to, letting people go, just being really mean to people when I'm really a nice person. And I think for men, it's kind of the same thing, the broken relationships, the drinking, the self-hatred, because I think sometimes as women, you know, society tells us, well, it's your decision. It's your decision and not anybody else's. And for men, sometimes they are involved in the decision, but a lot of times they are not. And so they feel helpless. And, you know, I've met men who begged the woman not to have the abortion, but because society tells them that it is their body and it's their choice, then they went ahead. And those men suffer. Men suffer, women suffer, families suffer.
So let's look at, let's say, even a spouse. You know, this is a married couple who from the beginning wanted to have children, but now the male realizes they have no control over their spouse's decision to have an abortion. And they're married again. I mean, even if they're not married, but in this scenario, they're married. So I can imagine the helplessness, like you said, that a man would feel being powerless. And they're the ones that are supposed to be the protectors of the family. I mean, that's innate within them. Mm-hmm. And just not having any choice whatsoever in the decision to let go of a child and to
Absolutely.
Have an abortion.
And I think abortions are so common. Millions of babies are being aborted every minute, every second, that we are losing these children to abortion. Our orphanages are being closed. Schools are being closed because the numbers are just not there for these babies because they're being aborted. And when you look at it like that, that's really sad because we're losing people that should be here today.
Well, and so. Tammy, let me ask you, you mentioned that you have children, so I'm not sure if part of your thought process was, well, they would have had another sibling.
Absolutely. One of the things that I think as my children have gotten older, I know that when my daughter started high school or when she went off to college, those were really hard times for me because I thought I should have one more. I should have one in college graduating this year, or I should have two daughters and not just one son. And the times when my daughters would say, oh, I wish I had a sister, in my mind I would think, you do have a sister, but how do you tell them that? You know, how do you tell them that? So, you know, I have told my children do know about my abortion. They do know about their sibling. And I just tell them that she is their guardian angel. But when you look at it like that, yes, I have another child. But now that I've gone through Rachel's Vineyard and I've been healed and I know that my child loves me
and that God loves me,
I know that she's always with me. And now I'm not afraid to say that I have three children. I mean, I, when I go to the doctor and they say, how many children do you have? I say three now because I do have three. One's in heaven and two are here.
So then before you might have hidden the fact that you were pregnant three times or that you would have had three living children?
I would lie. And I never confessed to a priest. I accepted the fact that at the age of 28, I had to have an early hysterectomy, which is a side effect of an abortion. And I just accepted it because I thought, this is what I get. This is my punishment. God is punishing me, even though now we know God is, I mean, at the time, it was just really hard. So, yes, definitely.
So then, let me go ahead and ask you, Valerie, there might be a sense that you have no one to go to when mm-hmm. you're experiencing this. And I think that a lot of women, I understand that a lot of women, when they're in the process of deciding keep the baby, abortion, adoption, that they really feel they don't have a choice. Not only are they not educated because the abortion industry is deciding to keep things from them, but they feel they have no one to go to.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest thing in going back in retrospect, looking at my experience is they tell you it's a simple procedure. You'll be in and out. You'll go back to your life when really in reality, it just tears you up inside out, literally, because I think so many times when we walk out of that clinic or even now what's so popular is the pill form with women who, you know, have bled for up to 30 days. And I can't imagine, you know, these women who have endured this suffering for such a long period of time to know that they have to go through this experience for that drawn out process. And I think they don't promote it. None of this is promoted. You know, women are not knowledgeable of when they go in to take this pill one day and have to take this next pill in 24 hours, what is going to happen to their body.
And so I think in that sense, a lot of it is just promoting this awareness, and really what our team tries to do is just promote that awareness every opportunity we get to let people know that there's a website that they can go to, rachelsvineyard.org. We have our registrar whose number is attached to that website. We have our priest on whose number is attached to that. And so there are many first steps to take, whatever these men and women are, whatever stage they're at in their healing process, whether they're ready to talk to somebody, whether they're ready just to get information, whether they're ready just to send an email or to
all
inquire
confidential
about it.
I think that's
all
important
confidential.
For,
So I think it's just a matter of taking that leap of faith, because for many of us, I don't know that we've had many participants who come on who are so eager to be there. I mean, I think a lot of it is we're having participants come in not wanting to make eye contact, not much dialogue is taking place because of that shame.
Well, they feel ashamed.
Yes. And so it's our job to ensure that when they come in, they feel loved, they feel cared for, they feel, you know, that non-judgmental approach in any sense of the way.
And so the retreat is for anyone who has had an abortion yesterday to 40 years ago.
Yes.
So let me ask you a very important question. If there is a woman needing some healing, and it's been whatever amount of time, but they're having a hard time making that first step, how would you encourage them to do so?
I think definitely going to the website is initial first step, because we want them to have an awareness of what the weekend is, what Rachel's Vineyard offers, because there's so many resources available on that website, from materials they could read to contacts they could make to a hotline if they're wanting to get some immediate information. And then definitely look at the dates. Our retreats are held locally twice a year. And like I said, they're only open to 12 participants. We try and keep it very intimate, because there's so much healing, so much work that takes place on the weekend. And so that would definitely be the first step.
And then, Tammy, in terms of their relationship with God and just being able to reconcile the pain and suffering they're going through, and how God is a healer and He's a Father, what would you say to that woman who is struggling with her relationship with God?
I would just say, have faith, know that God loves you, and know that we love you, and we're here for you. And speaking for myself, it took me 4 years to go on Rachel's Vineyard, and I wish I would have went the very first time somebody told me about it, because then I wouldn't have suffered for so long, and now I'm just blessed.
Well, ladies, I hope that your ministry continues to be fruitful, and I highly suggest anyone who would like to have an encounter at the Rachel's Vineyard Retreat,
or know somebody,
or know someone to suggest that this opportunity is out there, and that you are welcome to come and encounter some healing. Stay with us. Deacon Nolte with Sacred Moments is up next.
This is Labors of Love, the ministries and evangelization of the Diocese of Corpus Christi. If you have questions or perhaps a comment about today's program, why not send us email? Address your email to labors@klux.org or by U.S. mail, 1200 Lantana, Corpus Christi, Texas, 78407. And now, with this week's Sacred Moment, here is Deacon Stephen Nolte.
Not long ago, there was a woman who was gravely ill, so ill, in fact, that her condition was terminal. Like many other families before and after who have faced a similar situation, her family rallied around her. Every one of the 5 young children in the family did what they could to help around the house, while their father did his best to pay bills and care for their mother. As the family struggled to find their way through the many problems they faced, a miracle began taking shape among the people of their parish community. Unbeknownst to the struggling family, a few members of the parish came together and committed themselves to providing hot meals for the family, not once or twice a week, but every single day. They spread the word to all of the parishioners, and to their surprise, every member of the parish signed up to help. A calendar was set up, and people quickly filled the dates. For a little more than 6 months, some person, couple or family from the parish, appeared at the front door of the ailing woman's home between 5 and 6 p.m. with a hot meal. Towards the end of the 5th month, a true miracle occurred. One evening, a few moments before 6, the doorbell of the family's home rang. The husband of the sick woman answered the door, only to find a young man, about 19 to 20 years of age, standing there. The young man asked whether it was the home of the sick woman, and upon learning that it was, explained that he had driven his grandmother to deliver a meal for the family. Acting as though he were embarrassed to be there, the young man went to bring his grandmother from the car. As the husband of the woman watched, a little shrunken old lady, standing barely 4 foot tall and carrying a pot, shuffled up the driveway on the arm of her grandson. The man, not recognizing the woman or her grandson, was filled with curiosity. When she finally arrived at the door, the woman told him, "I'm not from your church, but a friend told me about you, and I wanted to help." She then handed the man a 2-quart saucepan filled with beans and a single length of sausage equal to about 1/4 of a link to feed the family of 7. Refusing to enter the house or to greet the old woman and receive her thanks, the old woman waited at the door while the man emptied and cleaned the pot, returning it to her. Then she left on the arm of the young man, never to be seen again. The family ate beans that night, and not a single one of them asked for anything else. They were all satisfied with the meal, and there were beans remaining when they were done. The connection between the Gospels and this true story were obvious in the multiplication of the loaves and fishes, and the story of the widow who gave everything she had to the treasury, in the feeding of the least among us, and in the command to love one another. The truth for this family was that Christ visited them in the guise of an old woman and met them in their greatest need, and he continues to meet them in the Eucharist. May God grant you sacred moments in which you see his face in the faces of people around you, and may you always bear the face of Christ to those in need. Amen.
Thank you for being with us on Labors of Love. I'd like to thank my guest, Valerie Uriegas and Tammy Alcala with Rachel's Vineyard. If you would like more information, please visit them at rachelsvineyard.org or call 1-800-HELP-4-ME. Thanks again for being with us on Labors of Love.
You've been listening to Labors of Love with Margaret Alleria. Online MP3s of this program are available on the CCN server. Browse to podcasts.goccn.net. Scroll down and select the Labors of Love category. Be with us next week at this same time for another edition of Labors of Love. Labors of Love is a production of the Department of Evangelization, Diocese of Corpus Christi, and CCN, the Catholic Communications Network.